On the show today, ideas about falling in and out of love. And for a lot of relationships, the end point is when one person has fallen out of love and the other is still desperately holding on.
There is some kind of debate about whether love should actually be classified as an addiction.
This is psychologist Guy Winch.
It's a little cynical, and it's a little probably unpopular. But if we're just looking at what happens in the brain, then it might need to be regulated by the FDA.
Okay, he's not actually serious about the FDA, but Guy knows how addictive love can be because for the past 20 years, he's counseled hundreds of patients through heartbreak.
There's nothing else in terms of a human experience that can make a perfectly reasonable person go absolutely crazy. And you will see the biggest possible deviations from normal behavior when somebody is heartbroken. And it's hard to think of another human experience that would cause that kind of extremes. But with heartbreak, you see it all the time. You know, I know people who literally stayed in bed for weeks at a time. Mm. They don't go to work, or they go to work but spend the entire day in the bathroom crying. And then to try and get to the person, to try and change the person's mind, they will call and call and call. The person's not answering, or they've blocked them. They will spend the entire night online trying to see if they can get to them or their social media page through some avenue or outlet. The desperation people feel is profound.
And that's because on a chemical level, romantic love really is kind of like a drug. Guy Winch continues this idea from the TED stage.
Brain studies have shown that the withdrawal of romantic love activates the same mechanisms in our brain that get activated when addicts are withdrawing from substances like cocaine or opioids. Almost every one of us will have our heart broken. My patient Kathy planned her wedding when she was in middle school. She would meet her future husband by age 27, get engaged a year later, and get married a year after that. But when Kathy turned 27, she found a lump in her breast. She went through many months of harsh chemotherapy and painful surgeries, and then she found a lump in her other breast and had to do it all over again. Kathy recovered, though, and soon afterwards, she met Rich and fell in love. The relationship was everything she hoped it would be. 6 months later, after a lovely weekend in New England, Kathy knew he was going to propose, and she could barely contain her excitement. But Rich did not propose to Kathy that night. He broke up with her. Kathy was shattered. Her heart was truly broken, and she now faced yet another recovery. But 5 months after the breakup, Kathy still couldn't stop thinking about Rich. Her heart was still very much broken. The question is, why? Why was this incredibly strong and determined woman unable to marshal the same emotional resources that got her through 4 years of cancer treatments? Why do the same coping mechanisms that get us through all kinds of life challenges fail us so miserably when our heart gets broken? What I've learned is this. When your heart is broken, the same instincts you ordinarily rely on will time and again lead you down the wrong path. You simply cannot trust what your mind is telling you. Heartbreak can make even the most reasonable and measured of us come up with mysteries and conspiracy theories where none exist. Kathy became convinced something must have happened during her romantic getaway with Rich that soured him on the relationship, and she became obsessed with figuring out what that was. And so she spent countless hours going through every minute of that weekend in her mind, searching her memory for clues that were not there. He simply wasn't in love. Heartbreak is far more insidious than we realize.
I mean, it's amazing. We can think of so many challenging human experiences like battling a life-threatening ailment or dealing with a crushing injury, right? And yet, as you describe in your talk, there is something about heartbreak that is, as you say, more insidious than we realize.
It's actually much more insidious because the pain it generates is so severe. When you're dealing with a terrible disease or a terrible injury, or even if you're grieving a loss, the pain certainly can be very severe initially. But the difference between emotional pain and physical pain is such that if you and I discussed the time you broke your leg and you described it to me in detail, one thing will not happen, and that is your leg will not hurt from the description.
Yeah.
But emotional pain is different. If you, 20 years after the fact, tell me in detail about the time your heart was broken, you will reactivate that a little bit. You will be scratching whatever's left of that.
Heartbreak is a master manipulator. The ease with which it gets our mind to do the absolute opposite of what we need in order to recover is remarkable. We spend hours remembering their smile, how great they made us feel, that time we hiked up the mountain and made love under the stars. All that does is make our loss feel more painful. We know that. Yet we still allow our mind to cycle through one greatest hit after another, like we were being held hostage by our own passive-aggressive Spotify playlist. Heartbreak will make those thoughts pop into your mind, and so to avoid idealizing, you have to balance them out by remembering their frown, not just their smile, how bad they made you feel. The fact that after the lovemaking, you got lost coming down the mountain, argued like crazy, and didn't speak for 2 days. What I tell my patients is to compile an exhaustive list of all the ways the person was wrong for you, all the bad qualities, all the pet peeves, and then keep it on your phone. And once you have your list, you have to use it. When I hear even a hint of idealizing or the faintest whiff of nostalgia in a session, I go, phone please. Your mind will try to tell you they were perfect, but they were not, and neither was the relationship. And if you want to get over them, you have to remind yourself of that frequently.
Now, that is not to vilify the person, but that's just to balance out the idealizing, to remind yourself of all the times that you felt miserable because of them. To remind yourself of all the times you thought, maybe I should break up because this is just not making me happy.
How much control do we have in getting over heartbreak? I mean, do we have 100% control over it or 90% control over it? Can it even be quantified?
That's a very important question, because what most people do when they're heartbroken is nothing. They just ride it out.
Mm.
We cannot let our mind just do its thing. Our mind might be the most brilliant piece of machinery in the universe, but it requires adult supervision.
Mm.
And that means that we have to assert what the right things are for us to do and not do. We have to battle thoughts that are unuseful or harmful or damaging to us. When our mind says, oh, you know, I know you're not supposed to be in touch with a person that much, but wasn't her second cousin's wedding this weekend? I'm sure if I spent 7 to 8 hours on Instagram, I could find some kind of images of it from other people. When our mind has that brilliant idea, we need to take over and go, that's not going to be useful for me. As tempting as it is, and it is, we then have to find ways to distract ourselves, call a friend, start watching a movie, go for a run, do something that prevents us from doing that thing that our mind thought was a great idea, but actually is a terrible one. So, in terms of how much control we have over our recovery from heartbreak, however much we have, we need to assert. We have to have the fight with our mind. We might win some and lose some, but the fight has to be had.
That's Guy Winch. He's the author of the book, How to Fix a Broken Heart. You can see both of his talks at TED.com. Hey, thanks for listening to our show, In and Out of Love, this week. If you want to find out more about who was on it, go to ted.npr.org. And to see hundreds more TED Talks, check out TED.com or the TED app. Our production staff at NPR includes Jeff Rogers, Sanaz Mishkanpour, Neva Grant, Casey Herman, Rachel Faulkner, Deba Motasham, James Delahousie, J.C. Howard, and Katie Monteleone, with help from Daniel Shukin. Our intern is Kiara Brown. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Colin Helms, Anna Phelan, and Michelle Quint. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading right here on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.